Welcome to Sabbatical 101. My name is Bethany Walensky, and I'm an associate professor at Michigan State University. I had a life-changing sabbatical, and I'm on a mission to help fellow academics do the same. This podcast is a resource for all things academic sabbaticals. Each episode will provide you with inspiration and insight into the sabbatical planning process, regardless of your institution, discipline, length of sabbatical, or where you plan to sabbatical. I'm so excited to have you along for the ride.
Hi, Janine.
Hi, Bethany. How are you?
I'm good. I'm so excited to hear more about your sabbaticals. I was thinking about this today that we've been colleagues for 10 years and you've had two sabbaticals in the time that I've been at MSU, I think. But I don't know much about them. And the only thing that I think I know is a couple of years ago, we ran into each other at Plum Market here in Ann Arbor. And I told you that I was planning my sabbatical in France. And I remember you said to me that on one of your sabbaticals, you were writing two books. And you said, just don't write two books while you're on sabbatical and you'll be fine. So that's the extent of what I know about your sabbatical. So I'm so excited to hear more.
Oh, thank you so much. You and I have had some really great conversations, not just about sabbatical, but, I can remember sometime we were sitting at a bar somewhere. It might've even been Ren Haven. And we were sort of talking about this, this idea of work-life balance, which is a sort of a vexed term, but we both cared about it and just really how to make academia, this wonderful work that we do with so much autonomy, but how to make it sustainable. So, it's just so wonderful to be able to talk with you about, an opportunity available to us that is connected to that, just sustainability and, joy and work and, and getting what you want. Congrats on this whole thing that you're doing, this whole business.
Thank you. So before we dive into your sabbaticals, could you just introduce yourself briefly and talk about the focus of your scholarship? Because I have a feeling that your scholarly focus is very connected to the way you think about sabbatical and what you end up doing on your sabbaticals.
Sure. So I've been at Michigan State for 18 years. And so that's a long time. And I think what's important to know is my scholarly research has changed. And I would say in fairly marked ways. I'm an associate professor in the Department of Teacher Education. And I currently also teach occasionally, like the last 4 years, one course in the Department of Arts and Letters. I teach an intro to poetry course there. And right now, my scholarly work is as a poet. So I'll talk a little bit more about that. But I would say really my life has changed dramatically in the last 10 years with getting poetry books published and just realizing that this is maybe something that I should be doing with my life. Primarily my scholarship is the writing of poems, right? Which in the Department of Teacher Education and the College of Education, sometimes we frame that with a methodology of arts-based research or poetic inquiry. And to make a long story short, sometimes we often do that because it's about audience, right? It's a way for us to talk about how creative work is also inquiry and making meaning. But essentially, I'm a poet. But also epistemologically, my work has changed. I read a lot of philosophy. Of course, we all read our fair share of philosophy, getting our PhDs, and certainly philosophy and conceptual terms undergird our work. But I teach philosophical foundations and conceptual issues course in the MATC program. So my work is pretty much as a philosopher and a poet. But prior to that, I really did work in social science and qualitative research. My work really dealt a lot with understanding children's poetry writing and performance practices. And really that research agenda, along with my my poetry writing is what got me tenure, I would say. So, yeah.
And now post tenure, do you feel like you can focus more on your identity as a poet and not have to, I don't know, maybe frame it as much in terms that TE wants or needs you to frame it?
I think that's part of it, right? You know, I've been so fortunate. I mean, I've been so fortunate in so many ways. I mean, we're fortunate just to have sabbaticals. We're fortunate for these positions. I know that. And I'm, you know, very grateful to, you know, my department chairs and the dean for supporting sabbaticals and my colleagues, you know, who take up the work when we take a sabbatical every 6 years. But I also feel really grateful that my poetry collections have won national prizes. And when that happened, you know, when that happened, it surprised me, but it also was information for me that this is just something I should be doing in the world. So I think that's much more about purpose and mission that transcends, you know, just finding, you know, work to do that I can do at Michigan State. So it was just sort of a real awareness and surprise. I mean, I had always wanted to write a poetry collection, you know, that was on my bucket list, but you know, it's just a reminder, and it's a cliche that's so true, but like your dreams are like the containers you have for your dreams. They're just never big enough. You know, they're not big enough. And, and again, I think the work is still a little bit marginalized, only because, you know, poets tend to be in departments of English, but increasingly that's changing. You know, there are poets who you know, have a poet identity who are in colleges of education or, you know, around the country and the world. So
yeah. So tell me about your sabbaticals. You've had two sabbaticals, is that correct?
That's right.
And then one coming up in a few years. So yeah, tell me about them. What did you do during your sabbaticals and how did you decide how to use that time?
Yeah, so the first sabbatical was a year after I got tenure. Mm-hmm. So I was really exhausted.
Yeah.
You know, I was really exhausted. And I really spent the summer like doing laundry. I mean, like, I'm being facetious, but I do think there are lots of things that build up when you're trying to get tenure at a Research One institution. And I suppose it's maybe an advice piece, but I just kind of allowed myself to decompress for the summer. It's not that I didn't get into my projects. I did, but I also did things like, you know, took care of my health and tidied things up in my office and got my computer organized and took care of, you know, some health appointments that I had been neglecting. And I say that because I just think, you know, sabbaticals are different for everyone, depending on your circumstances and the year that you have them. So I definitely, you know, my summer was sort of, I worked, but I also just made time to step back. So I did have two major projects during my sabbatical. One was a scholarly book with Rutledge. I had received a Spencer Foundation small grant to study children's poetry writing and performance practices. And the year before I went up for tenure, I worked, you know, for a school year with a group of fourth and fifth graders at a local elementary school. And it was wonderful work. And but the book was, you know, it was a hefty scholarly book, you know, with everything you can imagine, an introduction and the conceptual framework and theory and then data analysis. And it was a lot. And once I got through summer, I really had a regimen for my writing. You know, I even remember I said, okay, Mondays through Thursdays, I'm going to write every day and I'm going to check in and check out. you know, I'm going to say, okay, I'm checking in at this time. What time did I check out? And I would actually record the hours that I worked. I wanted, you know, I had these goals, and Rutledge was expecting a book from me as well. And then the other project that I was doing is I wanted to write my first poetry collection. So I had several poems, and many of them I had written with my colleague, Laura Apal. She and I had taught an undergraduate poetry course together, and we would share poems with the class and with each other in workshop. And so I had all these poems, and I learned a lot about poetry writing from her. And so I needed to sort of write more of those poems, revise them, and get all that together. Well, what I didn't realize is I could have really, one book would have been enough.
Yeah.
And in fact, I really, towards spring, when I was, you know, going to re-enter back into MSU, I found myself very stressed. You know, I felt myself very stressed because I had these goals for myself and I wanted to get them done because I had new things I wanted to do when I returned. So, but it's okay. You know, I handled it. I got through it. But that was probably my advice to you, is just, you know, maybe one book and then some articles or other sort of projects.
Yeah. Was that a semester sabbatical or was it a year long sabbatical?
It was a full year. Great question. Full year. Okay. Full year. Yep. So the other thing that I did too is I remember my colleague Kyle Greenwalt said, you know, hey, you know, we should think about reading sabbaticals, where instead of all this writing, we just read, you know. How often, I mean, it's such a gift to have a sabbatical. Why not just say we're going to read all semester or all year? I just think that's a completely lovely idea.
Yeah.
I didn't do that, but I never forgot when he said that. And so Friday through the weekend were my reading days, which was so much fun. And I just have, and to this day, I mean, part of it's just being an academic. I have books just in every room, stacked everywhere. And I'm the kind of reader, I just sit down with six books and read a couple chapters here, a couple chapters there, a journal piece there. And it really made me cultivate a really sort of constructivist hodgepodge of a reading habit. Sabbatical really helped me to do that.
I love that idea of like a reading sabbatical, because I think sometimes we tend to have a narrow view of what counts as being productive on sabbatical. And I think of it as like this kind of neoliberal incursion into sabbatical, right? Instead of sabbatical being about rest and renewal, it's really become about, at least, you know, at MSU, when you submit your sabbatical application, what they care about is what will you be producing on your sabbatical and how does that benefit, you know, how does it benefit your scholarly trajectory, but also ultimately, how does it benefit the institution?
Right.
I don't think a lot of people would think about the value of reading on sabbatical, but that does contribute greatly to scholarship and to teaching and all the things that we do as faculty members.
Right. I know. I mean, one of the things that blows my mind is just like so many books, so little time. And you know, I just think about, oh my goodness, you know, we're going to leave this earth without having read all these different books, right? We all have these books that haunt us. And I think sabbatical should be that time to say, you know what, I'm reading War and Peace, or, you know, or I'm going to read, Caravaggio's memoir or something. And the other thing that's fun too, is sometimes we don't know where that reading will take us in our work. You know, in some ways, I think that's the other thing I want to say about sabbaticals too, is I think, I mean, lots of folks say this, you know, you write your sabbatical proposal, but you won't do exactly everything in that proposal, but you'll do other things. Right. Because I think that's what we want to do, is we want to have a basic plan, but also be open to all these possibilities that actually, you know, we're smart enough to say, oh, whoa, this is a really rich opportunity. And I really need to jump on this. You know, Bethany, you were saying about this idea of rest and recuperation, even though I said I was stressed toward the end of my sabbatical, certainly it was a full year. And I think it's also important to say I had a partner, but I didn't have children. You know, I had a dog. So, you know, the kind of space that I had to roam, you know, was a little bit different. Right. And, but I think the reason that I'm saying that is I think everybody, rest is part of it, but also fueling your, so as I think this is really important, fueling your spirit, which is a kind of rest. So I think a sabbatical should have a balance of like, how do I, you know, not that you need a checklist or something, but, you know, how can you grow intellectually, emotionally, spiritually, and physically, right? And not just for sabbatical, but what are some things you can try out that are habits you could take with you for your life?
Yeah.
And so I did that on sabbatical, and actually, not everyone likes to have to write down goals and so forth. I do. And so every year I write down ways that I can improve, you know, intellectually, emotionally, spiritually, and physically. I always just have something. And then that makes me feel like that I always have a sabbatical. No, like I'm always giving something, you know, to myself. But the reason that I brought up that I don't have children is one of the things I wanted to do on sabbatical to fuel me emotionally and spiritually was to really make sure I spent a lot of time with the people that I loved. Work does pull you away from that. It just does. I mean, you know, it there's no question that it does. And so my first sabbatical, there were all these big things like my parents' 50th wedding anniversary. My parents moved out of my childhood home. Mm-hmm. It was my mother's 70th birthday. And so what I did is I just spent a lot of time around that. I took a week off and I helped my parents move out of their house. I helped them decorate their new apartment because I could do that on sabbatical. Yeah. And the thing is, I made the choice to do that on sabbatical and it was important to me. And it actually, those kinds of things always affect my work as a poet. You know, I wrote my first poetry collection was called Elixir, and it's based on Gaston Bachelard's philosophical book about homes and spaces. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I've written a lot of poems about my childhood home and about homeland. And so it's, you know, it's not that I, you know, these things affect your work, mm-hmm. you know, I just feel like sometimes we feel like we're separating all of these things, but you know, as our colleague Mary Jeswick said, what doesn't have to do with education?
Yeah.
So, you know, when you're spending time helping your parents move out of their house and creating a new apartment that they've downsized to, this is what it means to be human. And there are things mm-hmm. to learn about that. And, right?
Yeah. And what you were saying too about kind of like fueling your spirit, it was making me think I commute from Ann Arbor, so I'm in the car for an hour. So I'm always trying to find, and right now I can't listen to anything politically related. So I've been listening to this book about planning. It's like a sort of a feminist approach to planning. And she was talking about integration, the idea of integration and kind of how we fit these multiple parts of our lives together. And I think for me, at least, sabbatical offers this really unique opportunity to, as you said, like try to make those pieces fit better or focus on all the pieces and not just one or two. And then also, like you said, to really find what fuels you and that you want to move forward with, like how you want to move forward post sabbatical. And I would say for me, like, I think I have maybe not a completely different worldview. I mean, sabbatical didn't change my worldview, but it changed the way that I think about my relationships and how I prioritize my time. And, you know, and it did give me a different perspective on my scholarship, but it wasn't only that, right? Because we're more than our scholarship. And so I think that's part of what sabbatical allows for, is this time to kind of grow in different ways that you're not able to, you know, when we're just kind of busy running to this meeting, that meeting, teaching, you know, trying to publish, things like this.
I love that. I love that. And I think sabbatical, right? I mean, it's supposed to be about rest. And I think only when you rest and you have quiet, these ideas come from that space and clarity comes from that space, because sabbatical is that year where there's, you know, one could argue the least white noise, because you don't have meetings and all of this in your head. So it's really an opportunity to have extraordinarily meaningful work and writing and relationships and be very, very creative about your life and what you're doing in the moment and really intentional. It's wonderful. So my first sabbatical too, I didn't go anywhere for like a half semester or something. My partner was working and I didn't want to leave him. And I also had traveled, you know, I was lucky enough to travel a lot, you know, with conferences and so forth, you know, the first 5 years I was at MSU. And again, I just was tired. I really did just want to stay at home. I love to write. I love to read. That's what I cared about. I did do a couple of trips that were really important for my work, both of which I studied with famous poets, Billy Collins. I studied with him at the Key West Literary Seminar, and he really shaped some of the poems in my first collection. And then I studied with Marge Piercy, who's sort of known as like the ultra feminist sort of Gloria Steinem of the poetry world. And so that was really extraordinary. And I met some other women who studied with her, and we're still very good friends to this day. So I did, you know, certainly do some trips. Now, my second sabbatical, interestingly enough, was during the pandemic. So, yeah. So I had everything lined up to do all, whereas my first sabbatical, I was tired and so just wanted to stay at home. My second sabbatical was also a full-year sabbatical, and I had plans to do all these residencies, you know, that were a month long. I applied all these places. Well, then COVID happened and everything got canceled. Some things went on.
Was it the 1920 academic year, or was it 2020? Yeah.
Exactly. Okay. Yep. It was that spring when it happened, and I was going to go on sabbatical in August. And so, but you know what I did? Down in my sunroom, I turned my sunroom into a forest. So like I bought all of these stencils and I just put trees all around, all on my walls. And I haven't changed it in 6 years. And it's like this magical fairyland. You know, there's little fairy lights. There's trees everywhere. And actually I meet my students there now and we like do poetry workshops and they're like, I love this room. And it was, you know, like lots of folks did who, you know, were trying to be creative with quarantine. That's what I did. And so I ended up writing two books again on my second sabbatical because we couldn't go anywhere, but this time they were two poetry collections.
Okay.
Right. One I was almost finished with and it came out, you know, it came out right away. So I don't know that it's fair to say I wrote two poetry collections. One, I had the manuscript written and it got accepted. And so I had revisions to do at the beginning of the sabbatical. And then the whole rest of the sabbatical year, I wrote my next poetry collection, which, you know, it's always really nice when you funding and you've got the work that you can do when you go on sabbatical. That's just really worked for me. I'm sure there are other ways to do it. Just the timing has just worked out that way. So before my second sabbatical, I got a Michigan State Humanities and Arts Research Grant, which was really lovely. And that allowed me to, one of the things that I was really, really interested in spiritually was Thich Nhat Hanh's work. And I had read the Heart of the Buddhist Teaching and many other Buddhist texts.
Buddhist?
But at any rate, my first poetry collection was about home and homeland, poems of home. And then my second poetry collection was what it means to be at home in the body. And Thich Nhat Hanh, there's this beautiful phrase called body of bliss, which means, you know, when we're so happy and comfortable in our own bodies, if other people see that, they might be liberated to do the same. And I thought that concept was so beautiful. And so the book is basically based on concepts from about the body, but there's also Me Too poems in there as well, you know, just about what it's like to be a particular woman in a body in a particular time. There are pandemic poems, right? So illness and just the terror of what we were seeing on TV. What did I do? For whatever reason, I was one of those writers that was able to write about political upheaval and COVID. I was just so grateful that I was the kind of artist at that time that was able to do that.
Yeah.
So both very different sabbaticals. And my next one, I mean, I'm inspired by you. I mean, at our department meeting, hearing how you and your family went to France and you were in Bordeaux. And so I do know that I want to apply for residencies in Italy and France and spend more time, you know, just being inspired by a place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And do you have plans for another, more poetry books, or is that kind of to be seen what kind of the product might be from those sabbaticals or the goal of those sabbatical?
I do. Yeah. It's such a great question because one of the pieces of advice I would give is 2 years before your sabbatical, start writing down sabbatical ideas. So I have a document on my desktop, just simply called sabbatical, and there are ideas in there for what I want my third sabbatical to look like. So one of the things I've done, I wrote a grant that I submitted, another internal humanities and arts grant. And what I've been reading, the philosophical book I'm reading now is about, it's called Becoming Animal. And it's really obvious, like a lot of people and poets and writers, I'm just very concerned about climate change and the effects that has not only on us, but on landforms and animals and ecosystems. And so I'm reading a lot of ecological philosophy, and that's what I want my next poetry collection to be about. And then I also want to write another collection. I lost my mother in January, which is a huge, huge void. And I haven't been able to write about her yet. But in a couple of years, for sure. I think I'm ready now. But I really want to write a poetry book about the philosophy of food and wine and her, because she was so much about food and wine. And so those are going to be my two projects. And I'm going to travel places that are going to support that. Maybe Bordeaux. I don't know.
Yeah, that sounds amazing. And I love this idea about starting early with planning, not necessarily putting a plan in place, but just starting to, when those ideas pop into your mind, writing them down. Because I think sometimes, or at least for me, by the time I got to that, every institution does it differently, but at MSU, we apply for our sabbatical. Essentially, you apply a year before the sabbatical starts, which feels like a long time out, but then it also doesn't, if you only start then, it doesn't give you a lot of time to really think deeply, or like the way I approach sabbatical planning is really think about like, what is the purpose of your sabbatical? Not just what are the goals, the tasks you're going to accomplish, but what's guiding your sabbatical? What's the through line? What do you want? What do you need from your sabbatical? And sometimes that's like you mentioned your first sabbatical, just being exhausted. That resonates with me so much. And I feel like for my sabbatical, I needed rest. I needed to do no work for like the first 3 months. And I feel like I will say that as much as I can just to normalize it so that if anyone else is going to take a sabbatical and they feel like they just need to rest for a while, like I think that's okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, I love that idea of kind of having this running record. And then also it sounds like for these residencies, you probably have to plan a bit in advance to, apply for residencies and figure out all the logistics. Is that
absolutely
correct? Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, I mean, not this summer, but next summer, I'll have to start applying for residencies. And it's quite a bit of work, Some of them are like small grant proposals, you need to have letters of recommendation and manuscripts that you submit and all of that. So it's really, I think like 3 years before that sabbatical, start to think about it, get things lined up. And I would also say this is a personal decision, but a couple of years before sabbatical, really think about what other things beyond your scholarship you want to take on. So I think I will say what I hear a lot of my colleagues and colleagues elsewhere say about what they did wrong on their sabbatical is they said, I don't feel like I had a sabbatical. I can't tell you how many times I've heard that. And some of the reasons are, you know, they still have a lot of doctoral advisees that they're working with. Mm-hmm. You know, that work is wonderful and rewarding, but it's also a lot of work. And so sometimes sort of timing, being creative about timing that, so you don't have three students that are defending, you know, the year of your sabbatical. Or if you're doing a lot of review work, you know, one of the things that I did is I got off of all my reviewing assignments just for a year. You know, just so really, really, really thinking of, and it's okay to have those boundaries, especially because, you know, we work so hard and we give so much, you know, those years that we're back on campus. So I think it's just, you know, really thinking about what you're going to say no to. I also very carefully wrote an out of office email reply on, you know, on my automated email, so that I would just check my email once a week. We all know that email is a lot of the work that we do. It can be 2 hours of work. And so you don't want to be doing that on sabbatical. I don't want to be doing that on sabbatical. And so kind of figuring that out, I think is important. I don't know. Did you have experiences like that too?
Yeah. And actually, I was just thinking that one of the best pieces of advice that I got, so it was probably in January or February when I was starting sabbatical that summer, Lynn Payne, one of our colleagues in teacher ed, said, what's your plan for, you know, all of the students you work with, and how are you going to communicate that with them? And I thought, that's a great question. I haven't really thought of that, because I kind of thought, like, okay, I'll put up an email away message. But she really encouraged me to think through, okay, you have different students who you advise who are in different stages of the program, or you sit on different guidance committees or practicum committees. And so she said, you can have different approaches to setting boundaries with each of those kind of, I don't know, stakeholder groups, for lack of a better term, right? Like the people who are going to be asking you for things during your sabbatical. And it's, you know, very reasonable that they would need things from me. But she kind of encouraged me to think proactively about how I wanted to set that boundary. And I found that so helpful. And I think then that it gave me space. Like we went to France, and I did have one advisee who was going through, you know, working on her practicum. And fortunately, one of our colleagues, like, did so much work for me to kind of run point with her. But I knew there was one person who, like, really kind of needed me a little bit more. So I was kind of there for her. But everyone else, I felt comfortable that, like, I had a plan in place. And so I could really unplug. And I think you're absolutely right that, you know, thinking this through in advance really can help you feel like you are having a sabbatical and, like, just having a different rhythm, right? Different routine.
Yeah. Yeah. Of course, these are personal I loved hearing that, Bethany. It's so helpful. And, you know, I think these are personal decisions too. And teaching is always relational. I've tended to have one doctoral student that I was still advising at the dissertation stage or elsewhere during sabbatical. And I did actually like it. It was nice to have, you know, I had so many boundaries. It was really nice to have somebody that I could sort of interact with in, you know, in an intellectual way. And then I also think too, for those students who, you know, somebody's asking you to be on their committee or to step in on something, and if you choose to say no, it's actually, we're modeling for them too possibilities for them when to make their, you know, their work sustainable when and if they're in academics. So I think it's really very healthy.
Yeah. And I think you mentioned that this is also personal. And this is one of the things, I mean, I've talked to so many people now over the past 6 months about their sabbaticals, and I'm working with clients on planning their sabbaticals. And there are no two sabbaticals that people are making the same decisions about what they're committing to, how they're setting boundaries. It's really so dependent on, you know, where people are in their career, in their life, you know, with their family, their relationships, you know, what their goals are. And so I really, in some ways, I think the most important thing about planning a sabbatical or thinking about a sabbatical is making sure that you're doing the one that's the right sabbatical for you. So I don't, like, your sabbatical sounds lovely, but that doesn't mean that that's the right sabbatical for me. And I think sometimes we can there's not a lot of guidance or support about like, how do we even think about sabbatical? So we might cling to these ideas like, oh, a sabbatical only counts if I go abroad, or a sabbatical only counts if it's this, right? But I think there are so many different ways to take a sabbatical and lots of different ways that it can be very fulfilling.
Yeah, I think that's such a great point and probably the best advice there is, right? So yeah, Miles Davis says it takes a long time to sound like yourself, but it takes a long time to listen to yourself too, right? I mean, really, you know, and that's why I think this podcast series that you're doing is really important, right? Because all of these different interviews, everyone is making something public that normally isn't. You know, colleagues will just say privately, let's go for a drink. I'm going to have my first sabbatical. What'll I do? Yeah. So now, you know, people can pick and choose from, you know, all these different kinds of sabbaticals, but it really is about them. And I think the more creatively we think about sabbatical is actually the very point about sabbatical.
Right.
Right. So,
and
it'll
benefit ourselves and ultimately our institutions, right? I think if I'd had a sabbatical where I just had, you know, work goal after work goal, and I didn't kind of let myself rest and stop feeling so burned out, then I wouldn't have been as useful to our department, to my students, to MSU coming back. You know, I feel like because I had a sabbatical that let me just kind of reset, I'm much better. Like, I'm much more effective. I'm able to come back in and participate instead of like, oh my gosh, I feel like I didn't have a sabbatical and now I'm resentful and regretful and things like that.
Yeah, that's such a great point. And really listening to what you want to do. You know, you're reminding me, Bethany, too, that, you know, although both of my sabbaticals involve scholarship, I mean, primarily I was writing books. And of course, those books affect my teaching and hopefully affect, you know, how I am as a citizen doing service work. But, you know, once you have tenure, you can even say, you know what, I'm taking on this new role as an editor with a journal that is like my dream journal. And I, you know, a third of my sabbatical is going to be about launching this new journal. I mean, right, we can do that. Mm-hmm. Or if one is really, I don't know, you know, it's possible that someone just might be at a point in their career where they say, you know what, I really want to think about a new doctoral seminar around mm-hmm. X, because when I return, I just want something so fresh and original and creative. And I just haven't had the headspace to devote to reading and conceptualizing it. But we don't actually think about having sabbatical as a time for preparation for future teaching, but it's mm-hmm. also, you know, this is also really lovely and a part of the joy of our work and our legacy. But again, I think most sabbaticals do tend to be about writing, right? And products and things. And
yeah,
but it doesn't have to be. It
makes a lot of sense because it's nice to have those uninterrupted, you know, the work days aren't as fragmented, right? But I also, like, when I think with people about how to write a sabbatical application, the way I thought about mine was kind of thematically instead of the products that I want, like what I wanted to produce. Instead, I thought like, you know, well, one of my themes was finishing projects. So maybe that's product, yeah. But it was kind of like finish these things that I had started that I haven't had time to finish. But then also like cultivating relationships and figuring out where projects were going to head in the future. That was a really important thing for me to do. And sabbatical allowed me to have the headspace where I wasn't going in all these different directions to really reflect on, you know, what's working well in this project, what things do I want to continue, and what things do I, you know, have I taken on that just kind of aren't working well or I'm not really as interested in anymore. So I think, yeah, we can think about different kind of buckets almost of things that we want to do and I think are like personally and professionally. I know, you know, our institution doesn't care about our personal goals, but that for me was equally important. You know, what do I want? What have I been putting off in my kind of being on the hamster wheel of being pre-tenure? And what do I want to get back to for myself that I know is going to make me better and better able to be present and contributing when I go back to MSU in the fall.
It sounds really thoughtful. And yep. It sounds like there was a lot of sort of regrouping and organizing, right? That you don't have time to do. Like, you have a sense of these things, that these things need to be in order. So when you come back for sabbatical, but sometimes it's just hard to get to it. You made me think one of the things that I did on my first sabbatical that actually was pretty time consuming that I didn't anticipate, but it ended up being really useful for my work and for even recruiting doctoral students is I designed a professional website. I mean, I had something sort of makeshift and very simple pre-tenure, but it takes a lot of time to put together a website. And so like I researched different platforms and put that together. And so, right, that's an example of something that, well, I thought this was going to be something small I was going to be working on, and it ended up taking up a lot of my time. But I, you know, lots of folks, that's how people find you, and work comes from that, and all of that. It's funny. I'm sure there are all sorts of things both of us did on sabbatical that we can't even remember, right? Like, because we're thinking like in terms of projects. But
so are there any lessons learned from your previous sabbaticals that you feel like you're going to carry forward as you think about, or that you are already carrying forward as you think about your plan for your next sabbatical?
Yeah. Well, one thing that's astonishing is, you know, people always said, all of this gets easier. You're like, you know, when I first was hired at MSU, they said, everything gets easier. And I guess that means something different for everybody. I have such a strong writing practice right now. You know, my writing practice is just really strong, and my routine is really strong. And so I feel like that third, I just feel like I feel well practiced in the sabbatical. And so I feel like I'll be able to slip in into it with all, you know, I have two sabbaticals behind me. And so all of the things that I've mentioned before about working three years ahead and making sure you say no to particular things, having boundaries, allowing for time for reading, constructivist play a little bit, you know, just being open to some creative opportunities that might come to you. I think the thing that I will do, and I think this is always natural, is you want to have a new experience. I mean, human beings always want to have new experiences, right? And so this is my third sabbatical. I'd like a new experience. I haven't really gone away for more than a week. And so I would like that experience. I would like to see what it's like to do a residency that's a month long, or even 2 weeks. I'd be thrilled with that. 2 weeks, 3 weeks. In many ways, just because I'm curious. You know, sometimes it's just worth doing something for curiosity.
It sounds like you have habits that you know, that are present whether you're on sabbatical or not, but you also kind of have a way of transitioning into that sabbatical mode that's worked for you well. Do you have any tips about reentry after sabbatical?
It's a wonderful question. I'm a writer, so I'm forever writing everything. I reflect. All my thinking happens through writing. I actually, the end of both of my sabbaticals, I had a document that just said, these are things that I want to bring into my sabbatical. These are practices and habits that I want to bring into sabbatical. And so one of the things, and if you know me, you know this is true, I check my email first thing in the morning and last thing at the end of the day. I don't get alerts when I get a new email. You know, I, as a pre-tenure faculty member, I didn't. You know, it was like this Pavlovian response. Oh, what's going to happen to me? What do I need to do?
Yeah.
So many, many things like that, that I, you know, you, of course I can do it without apologizing. Nobody's watching you, or well, maybe some people are saying, well, why isn't she responding to me within the hour? But that's not my concern, right? I mean, yeah. It's completely, you know, absolutely reasonable practices that you can bring back to MSU are fine. I think, you know, one of my colleagues told me, you know, to the extent that you can bring habits, you know, try to have as much as your normal work life be a sabbatical as possible, right? Mm-hmm. So say yes to those things, say yes to all those things that are nourishing for you intellectually, And then the things that are depleting, just understand you have to sort of move through them the best you can, but try to reduce those depleting things as much as possible. You know, we don't need to say yes to everything. So, you know, if you're constantly getting, you know, one of the things that I did less of, I would get a lot of requests to do presentations in other classrooms and in public schools. And so I enjoy doing that to some extent, but I don't just personally don't want to spend, there's only a certain amount of time I want to spend doing that. And on sabbatical, I realized when I came back, I didn't want to do that. And so I will recommend, you know, doctoral students who want some of those experiences, right, to put on their curriculum vitae. Let's see. Reading is something that I do a lot more than I did pre-tenure. Like I read constantly. I take a book with me everywhere, even if I'm just reading a little bit, you know, between meetings. I write every single day. That's hard to do when I'm teaching. You know, when I teach a full course a semester, like a full load of courses a semester, it's harder. But what I will still do is I'll just say the first 30 minutes of the day are mine. And, or even if it's a day where it's impossible, I'll just say, I'm just going to write a few lines of poetry or an image. So just so I'm just like practice, just so like a toe is in the water, just so I feel like, you know, today it's not going to happen, but I've touched my toe in that water. And then tomorrow I'm going to have more time for writing. So I think this idea of whatever those things you love so much about sabbatical, put in all the soft corners in any way you can, I guess just bringing more of your humanity to your work. And I think that benefits our students too, when we make that public that we're doing it.
Yeah, for sure. We can be good models of having lives that are not only about our work, right? Being well-rounded humans.
And the other thing too, I think about reentry. I mean, it's, you know, one can come back and say, well, you know what? I have to teach this many courses a year, but I have a little flexibility. And so if you have a flexibility to teach less the first semester you come back, that's great, right? The water's just a little tepid. Or maybe being a little bit more mindful about what you say yes to that first semester, because allow yourself to have some loose ends that you haven't tied up from sabbatical, you know, so you can kind of come in a bit more of a calm way, right? I mean, we can do that. We can, we have the autonomy to do that, to continue saying no, right? You know, I think, you know, we learn on sabbatical how to carefully write those emails to say, you know, I'm not available and this is why until this date, but, you know, we can bring that back with us on reentry. We can say, well, I've already said yes to these three committees. And so I'm just, you know, I really can't do this, but I would be happy to fill in this other way. You know, you always want to help out your colleagues to the extent you can, if it's possible, but maybe not to the full degree that they want at a particular time.
Well, Janine, this has been such a fun conversation and I love hearing about your sabbaticals and I'm so excited about your next one. And I can't wait to hear, you know, how your plans evolve and what sorts of exciting residencies you wind up doing. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Bethany, thank you so much. It was so fun to talk. And I look forward to following all the other interviews that you post. And I'm sure I'll get some ideas for my next sabbatical and I'll just share them with you.
I hope you found this episode of Sabbatical 101 helpful and inspirational as you think about your own sabbatical. If you want to read more about sabbaticals or get even more support for planning your own life-changing sabbatical, head over to my website, www.bethanywalinsky.com, to read my blog and for more information about my sabbatical coaching program.